But I wish somebody sat down with me and painted the true, real expectations of American life. When you're coming here and you're saying, I'm going to do medicine, what it means. When you're doing engineering, what it really means. And when you come here, are you coming back or are you staying? If you are staying, you need to do A, B, C, D. Organize yourself this way. It doesn't mean that it's the end of your dreams, no. You're just taking a different route to get you to your destination, but this is the most friendly and safer route as far as actually getting to thrive in the country.
This is a Sorted Immigrant Stories podcast. My name is Zenith Mwangahamambamalao, and I am your host. And for those of you that are stopping by for the very first time, this is a podcast about immigrant journeys, the things I and others wish we knew. We have interviews and share conversations with immigrants from diverse backgrounds and countries as they share their own immigration stories. We explore struggles, triumphs, and cultural adjustments. We discuss identity, belonging, and community. And we also highlight successes and contributions to both American society and back home, and that's wherever home might be. We also review some books that touch on the immigrant story. So don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Sorted Immigrant Stories, and today I am joined by Mr. Mwaka Chambwa, and he is a licensed financial professional with expertise in various services, which we're going to get into in a moment. So, Mr. Chambwa, just take a moment to say hello to our listeners.
Well, hello, everybody who's tuning in from where you are tuning in from. I'm excited to be on this podcast today and just to share a little bit of our experience in financial services.
Wonderful, wonderful. We are very much honored. So before we get into your story, I just want to talk about your financial services a bit. You know, as immigrants, we don't prioritize financial literacy. It can be a challenge due to various factors like adapting to new environment, finding employment, and managing daily expenses, like daily lives. There's just so many things we're worried about. However, improving financial literacy can significantly impact long-term financial stability and security. We're learning that now. So what do you think, in your opinion, are some of the things we need to be doing to improve that for ourselves and all the other immigrant families?
Well, that's a loaded question. That's a very loaded question. I think if I look back at when I came to this country about 20 years ago, whatever knowledge I had about money, I came with that knowledge from Zambia. Okay. Right? And I tried to apply that knowledge here in the States, and I found that things don't work the same. And for the longest period, I felt like I could not advance, I could not move. Until a few years ago, I got licensed to be a financial coach. And that's when I started to learn that, oh, wait, there's essential information that we actually need to understand in this country. And that some people who have been your top 1 to 5% have known certain information, financial information, and they've applied that information for many years, and their communities are thriving, but our communities are struggling because we don't have the base foundation of money. Like, for example, I think about the 5 basics of money, how to make money, how to grow money, how to save money, how to protect your money, and how to transfer money. Just those basic foundation, if you ask anybody in our community, they would struggle. They'll know about saving, right? They'll know about how to make money. I work 2-3 jobs, but how to effectively save money, how to protect your money, and how to transfer that money. Most people in the community don't know. So that's a little, that's what I can say for now regarding the foundational pieces of financial literacy.
So you talk about the five steps. Do you think you can briefly give an example of each?
I can do that, right? Now, number one, how to make money. Most people assume that if I have multiple jobs, for example, then I'm doing good, then I'm making money, right? Are you really making money? Yeah, you're making money now. But in the long run, how long can you sustain that? So how you're making money, you have to think about it and think about it wisely, right? Am I making a lot of money? Is it hurting my body? And how long can I sustain working 3, 4, 5 jobs? Oh, versus can I have a job that I can do during the day? And maybe at night I start building something that belongs to me. You see? Or can I have something that will give me a lot more longevity than my job, right? Because your job is going to end at you, but can I build something that will do what? Take care of my children and my children's children. Like the Bible says, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children's children. It goes on and on. Can you build something that can do what? Leave money behind, right, in successive generations? That's how to think about making money. Number two, how to grow your money. Some people use things like a 401k, for example, IRA, qualified accounts. Right. And if I talk to you in the last 2 weeks, you probably would be crying. I had people call me, hey, Marka, my 401k lost $2,000. My 401k lost $9,000. Right. And somebody came and said, no, I lost $13,000.
I said, I just didn't even look. I'm like, there's no point. I'm not gonna.
I'm glad you didn't look, sister, because you'd be on blood pressure medication right now, right? Right. So where you're growing your money really matters. And I didn't know this. You come to this country, and the person who invites you or hosts you tells you what to do, and you do that. It says, then it get a. An IRA or get a 401k because I have a 401k. Not knowing that over time, I'm reading this book here by Tony Robbins, right? Okay. It's called Money Master the Seven Game, the Game, Seven Simple Steps to Financial Freedom. And it says over a lifetime, most people lose about $157,000 in their 401k over their lifetime. And it makes sense to me. So you have to think about where you're growing your money. Are you growing it in those qualified accounts where you're making and losing money? When you make and lose and make and lose and make and lose, how much do you make at the end of the year? Only so much, right?
Yeah. So, and I think that's where it gets very confusing, right? And that's why I was even asking, like, what we can do to improve this knowledge for our community, because I'll give you my own example. And I didn't even know to begin with about, forget even that the 401k can go up and down. I didn't even know there's even a 401k I could put money in to begin with.
Look at that.
You understand? It's like, just, okay, once I became a full-time employee, they give you a package and there's insurance and it's in there, right? It's in there. There's like 401k. But because of ignorance and just not understanding, I didn't know what that was. So I skipped right over it because it wasn't compulsory either then. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like required the way it is now. I think the law, they either require the company to put like 4% or something. But before it was by choice. Mm-hmm. I'm going on about my business working full time. And I'll never forget one of my managers, Raymond, he had asked me if, when I renewed, I can't remember how the conversation came up, but it was whether I had a 401k or if I had signed up for it. And because the company was matching 6% at the time. This was 15 years ago. And I was like, oh, what is that? How does that even work? Ooh, I had worked almost 10 years at the point. having zero such account. Yeah, because I didn't even know. And it was at that point, it was like, oh, let me sit you down. And then he started explaining to me. So this is like, oh my God, there's even such a thing as a 401 or a 403. And then you start those journeys. And obviously with time, like you were saying, you start to realize, oh yeah, there's that. And then there's others. Then now you start differentiating, which is the best, you know, where should you go? And what should you do? It's just so much. And it's so overwhelming. So it begins with not even just knowing that these things are even there to begin with. So, okay. So what about, and we're going to get into details as we go along. What about the protecting? What was it, the protecting and the transfer?
Yes. So there's making, there's growing. So essentially in growing, you want to make sure that you grow your money in accounts that don't lose. Warren Buffett says the two rules of money, the first two rules of money. Number one, make sure you make money, but don't lose. Number two, he says, never forget rule number one, right? So the rule number one of money must really be there. It's very important. So you have options. It's now getting with somebody who's licensed in all states, like myself, a financial professional, to walk you through this information, right? To walk you through some options. You actually have options. We just don't know. And then number three, I talked about protecting money. There's a guy, a gentleman who owned Cash App, the guy who founded Cash App. Unfortunately, I think it was not last year, but the year before, he was murdered.
Right.
But then what surprised me is to see that he was worth $10 million. And when he passed away, His family had to open a GoFundMe because all his assets were now frozen in probate. There's something called the probate court system that we need to come to terms with. So how are you protecting your money? Because, yeah, he had qualified accounts, checking savings accounts, CDs, all these places where they keep money. When he died, the government froze those accounts, right? So what they're doing now is they're taking money out of those accounts and paying off his debt, right? So it's really important how you set up certain accounts. You want to make sure that you avoid the probate court system. So when you pass away, you don't want your family to be like this guy who's worth $10 million, but his family is now on GoFundMe because they're waiting for the government to pay off all his debt. Who knows how much money, you know, will remain after they've paid off the debt.
I'm so glad you've brought up the point and everything that comes with death and dying, right? And the GoFundMes, because we've seen that in our communities, we've had to do a GoFundMe almost every month. There's a GoFundMe. And, well, I don't want to say it's fatigue, but maybe sometimes people don't have, and sometimes you worry that will the goal be reached, right? And somebody's body needs to be taken back home. And for the longest time, the question has been, well, what are we doing to prepare ourselves for such moments? And it's like, well, make sure you have life insurance, make sure you have this, you have that. Well, sometimes people have those things in place, but because of the red tape that exists when someone dies, sometimes people have those things in place, but still you're stuck with, well, the funeral has to go on right now. We need to send the body in the next, whether it's few weeks and bury and pay, but the money is not released. So it's also knowledge of these type of things, like which accounts do people need to have to make sure that, you know, when death comes, we're able to get the money and have this funeral. Because the GoFundMes have been a challenge in our community, and sometimes it's so sad. Somebody's, you know, you end up burying somebody here, and maybe their family wanted the body at home, but because, you know, you can't afford to. And sometimes there are four or five funerals at the same time. I remember last year in July, it was like four or five. And I was like, oh my God. And almost everyone had a GoFundMe. And, you know, and sometimes people don't give because we've heard of stories of people come up, do GoFundMe, and then right after they're either taking a trip or they bought a piece of land.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
And things of that sort. So that's very interesting. So I hope you can expand on that, like the kind of accounts people need to have to avoid those red tapes.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the subject of insurance. Maybe a little bit later, I'd like to discuss that in detail.
Sure.
Right? Because there's information that has been withheld from our community for many years. And a lot of it has to do with the type of life insurance that you have, life insurance policies, right? But before I touch on that, I still had to talk about, I finished protecting money. And then I was going to talk about saving money, right? Mm-hmm. Saving money. Saving money is key. I remember I was reading a book, another book. It's this book by Napoleon Hill, right? It's called Think and Grow Rich and the Law of Success in what? The Law of Success in 16 Steps. I was reading it, and the author, Napoleon Hill, he referenced a guy who had a couple million dollars, and he lost all that money because he couldn't save money. He couldn't control his spending habits. It doesn't matter how much money you make. At the end of the day, it's what you have, right? If you don't know how to save money, you're always going to be broke. That's just period. So now we have to teach our community how to save. Not just how to save, but where to save. Am I saving in the bank account or CDs? Or am I saving in the 401k? Or am I saving in accounts that actually grow at compound interest? There's a big difference, right? And now, nobody's going to teach you this information. Because to start with, I know for sure, Zenith, your bank didn't tell you anything about growing money or saving money, right, in at compound interest. I know that for sure. I know most CPAs are not going to tell you that because it's not part of their curriculum in school to go in detail, you know, in some of these are financial accounts. So now saving money is key. And then the last one, transfer. How do you transfer money now more effectively from you to the next generation? Because I know most of us want our children to be in a better place than where we started in this country. Listen, when I first came to this country, I was a student, but I was hustling at the same time. Like, you're going to school, maybe you're on OPT, and then you have to do construction, and you have to go wash windows, mop floors. By the time you go back to class, you're tired, and you're wondering, why am I getting B's and C's while my friends are getting AAA, right? It's because you get into class and you're sleeping. I was sleeping the first 20 minutes in class. So now I don't want the next generation to follow in my shoes. I have to do what? Find a way to effectively transfer wealth from me to the next generation. So those are the five key principles and how we can apply them.
No, that's very insightful. That's we all need those lessons. We all need those lessons. So I encourage everybody to follow you and, you know, the classes that you give online, and just to help us, you know, in our community, because I think this is a much needed knowledge for everybody, so that, like you said, we leave our children better than we found it. We came here, we did the hustling, we struggled, but yeah, we cannot be going backwards. All right.
We can.
But I want to find out, because I know that when you mentioned about coming here and being a student, so when you first came, you were in medical school. And so what led you to transitioning from medicine to the financial world?
That's a very good question, right? That's a very good question. So when I came here, I really came young, straight out of high school, took all the prerequisites for medicine, worked a little bit, and then eventually got into medical school. While I was in med school, a friend of a friend reached out to me. It wasn't actually me, it was my wife. They reached out to my wife, and they were sharing important information about money. You see, 2 months before then, I tried my luck in the stock market. I actually took money. It wasn't my money, it was my son's money. Right. I took $10,000 of my son's money, and I was like, man, if I can multiply this money in the stock market, that would be great. I could have an extra $5,000 that we can use to do what? Pay off debt and pay off some things. Mm-hmm. I studied the stock market a little bit. Okay, found some good stocks. I put my money in. It shrank from 10,000 to 8,000 that day, one day. The next day, it went from 8,000 to 7,000 and then to 6. No matter what I was doing, what stocks I was putting my money in, I was not making, I was always losing. Until I found a statistic that shows that said over 90% of people who day trade or keep their money in stocks, they're going to lose. And I refused to accept that I would be a statistic. I was so determined, right? I was so determined until my portfolio came down to like 1,700.
Really?
That's when I said, you know what, Mwaka, what you're doing now is stupid. This is insanity. Are you going to wait until everything is zero? That's when I stopped. And so after that experience, I was always looking for different opportunities. So a friend of mine said, hey, look into this, right? Look into financial literacy, because there's financial industry has the most money. I think right now, banking, insurance, everything involved, it's about 109 or 14 trillion, something like that. And then followed by real estate at like 60 something trillion, right? So when they shared that, I was skeptical initially, that I said to myself, you know what, I lost money. I need to replace that money. What do you have to offer? And so they shared this concept on how you can be an entrepreneur, you can be part of a business system, grow something slowly, slowly. And as you grow that, right, as you grow the system or your business, you get compensated from the community base. So I thought, well, you know what? This sounds like a pyramid business. That's what I thought. Like, it sounds like a pyramid business. It sounds like Amway or Melaleuca. But when I looked more into it, I said, oh, wait a minute. You need a license to do this, right? Number one, you need a license. So all the 50 states will give you a license. And then number two, I studied the companies, affiliate companies or partner companies that we work with, over 160 companies, most of whom have been around over 100 years. We're talking about big companies. That put my questions at ease. And so I said, you know what, let me get a license and go for it. I went for it casually. I was looking for something like $500 a month, maybe, just to supplement my wife's income, who worked as a nurse. But then when I saw the results, I was quite shocked and impressed that every month I never made 500. I made way more than 500. Mm. And so that's when I started to think. All the while, I was in school during the day, and at night, I'll just coach people about money and get compensated. But last year, I reached a certain milestone in business, and I had to pray. I had to take time off. I took about 3 months to pray and consult God and just say, okay, there's this opportunity that has opened. Medicine has been in my life for the longest. And as I was praying, I started to think, I can go through medicine and get my medical MD degree. By the way, I only had about a year and a half to go. I can get my medical degree, but no matter how much I want, I cannot give that medical degree to my son to go practice or my daughter to go practice. I can't do that. It ends at me, right? Not only that, there are so many other factors that I started putting into consideration. And at the end of the day, right, I had to make the decision, and this was the best decision to make. Now, being an entrepreneur, building my own business system right now, mm-hmm. right? I can build this and transfer it down to my wife if I'm not here. If my wife doesn't want to be in business when the kids are 18, transfer it down to the kids and so forth. Even when I'm gone right now and my wife says, I don't want to be in business, the system is designed, is built already. It'll keep producing, giving money, even when you're not here.
Wow.
So that's what really caused me to say, you know what? Medicine is fine. You know, I dreamed about being a doctor. I can contribute to medicine by building hospitals in Zambia, working with the people over there, but let me focus full time on business right now.
There you go. That's powerful. And I think you're the second person in a row that I've, the last episode I had pre-recorded, and I had Ben Collins, a song where he's an AI expert. He has an AI company, and he did the same thing where he took time off like 3 months to think about what is it I'm supposed to be doing. So I think you did something very similar. You're in medical school, you want to help people, and you find this other calling, and you're like, okay, I need to think and decide and figure all this out. So what would you say from your medical training helped you with what you're doing now with the financial services?
Oh, that's a good question. Very good question. You know, medicine is very demanding. I feel like for you to be successful in medicine, you have to always be reading to keep up. Not only that, you need stamina. You need strategy and you need stamina. Some of those exams in medical school are 8-hour exams. So you need to know how to build stamina. You need to learn how to be patient, how to sit in one spot for a long time. Now all those things, being patient, having the discipline. All medical doctors that you see now, they're disciplined. You have to be very disciplined.
Right.
All those traits, if you took those traits that you acquire in medicine and applied it elsewhere, you are going to be top of the cream. If you know how to be patient, if you're very disciplined, and you have to be resilient to succeed as a physician, you have to be to go through the medical school. Things are not going to always go well. You're not always going to pass all the exams. But you have to come back and study again, and you get it. Right? All those lessons now when applied to business, if you're a business person, if you are a manager, if you are a pastor, if you apply all those principles, you're going to succeed. Oh, high-end organization. You have to be really organized for you to thrive in medical school or as a physician. You cannot afford to be all over the place. Now, when you apply that to business, you thrive because you are learning those, you're acquiring those traits under really intense pressure. Mm-hmm. So when you transfer it over to something else, it works in your favor. Yeah.
Wow, no, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Now, under financial services, obviously, there are so many different branches, so many different services that you might offer expertise on. And I just want to focus on the life insurance bit. Why is it so important for immigrant families to have life insurance?
Wow. You know, if there's something that we really need to emphasize is this whole aspect of life insurance. I think, and I'm going to talk about Zambians, we take it for granted big time because we just don't understand, right? Because the literacy is not there. So people usually criticize what they don't understand. They'll do that, or they take it for granted because they don't fully understand. Why is it important for our community to have life insurance? Many reasons. I can give you over 100 reasons. I'm going to give you just a few very, very important ones relevant to our community. Number one, death benefits is the most obvious one, right? You want to make sure that when you're not here, your family is not crying for you because you're not here, but financially they're also crying, they're struggling. You want to make sure that your loved ones have something. I think in our community there have been many cases where we're trying to raise money just to ship somebody back home. And that's not effective because the community, like you're saying, the community, we also have our problems. I want to give so-and-so's family $500. Oh, but wait a minute. My son's school fees are up. Maybe I'll give $250. Oh, wait a minute. We didn't finish paying the rent. Man, I'm just going to give $25. So everybody now gives $25, $50, $100. By the time we collect all the money, it's not enough to even send you back home. Mm-hmm. You see that? So now it's the most effective way to do what? To prepare for that transition, to make sure your family has something, right? something when you go, number one. And number two, I used to think life insurance is only for when you die. Boy, was I wrong. Not all life insurance is created equal.
Right.
I found out from reading this, where's that little book? Right. There's a little book called Money, Wealth, and Life Insurance. Everybody needs to read that book. It's only 62 pages, and it's written like a research paper. I love
it. It's on Audible too, so you can listen.
Oh, yes. You can listen to it, right? It's a very easy read. I like that it has evidence, right? Evidence to show you where they're getting all this information. And when I first read that book, it said something like, your top 1-5%, the wealthy people, they've saved money in life insurance for hundreds of years. So now you can use it not just for what? When I die, but cash value insurance has been used by JCPenney, McDonald's, and all these big companies for hundreds of years to do what? To save money. And even banks right now are keeping money in what? In life insurance. Wells Fargo had something like $24 billion being saved in a life insurance policy that belongs to the bank. So now, you know, the more you dive into the realm of financial literacy, the more you realize, wow, this information is important. Death benefits, saving your money. And then when you are sick, we talk about death with life insurance, but we don't talk about sickness. When somebody has a heart attack, a stroke, cancer, end-stage renal failure, things like blindness, paralysis, HIV, AIDS, right? Your first heart surgery, if they have to go in and clean your arteries, angioplasty, right? If they have to do an organ transplant, do you know that life insurance is that one bucket where money, a portion of the life insurance can pay out early if you are sick and cannot work? Most people don't know. They think life insurance is only for what? When you die. But no, when you get sick, right? When we get sick, a portion of the life insurance can pay out. It's called accelerated death benefits. Mm-hmm. I know companies that will give you up to 90% of the size of your life insurance if you're sick and you cannot work. And by sickness, I don't mean things like I broke my leg, I have COVID. No, right? Big, really serious things that hinder you from doing what? Getting paid so you can pay the bills. And there's so many reasons, but I'll stop there.
Okay. And you know, it's like you said, not all life insurances are equal, right? And it goes back to the point where I was saying the problem is that there's so much and it can be very, very overwhelming. Because when just with the life insurance itself, now there's the bit of, okay, now which kind of life insurance do I need to make sure that I have these, you know, accelerated death benefits, for example, or like if you're sick, there's a payout, because we know that it's not all life insurances that are created like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are really in general, you can find four types of life insurance. There's group life insurance, the one that you get through your work. It has some advantages. It's cheap and it's popular. Everybody can get it. Disadvantage is that it only pays the death benefits. If you get sick, it doesn't pay out, right? Not only that, you need to read the fine print. I saved my friend from reading the fine print of his group life insurance at work. Some of the policies say that you have to die where? You have to die on the job. If you're a nurse, you cannot die at home. Right, you have to be on the floor working. Right. Now, I'm not saying that all of them are like that. I'm saying read the fine print. When you get a credit card, you just swipe. You don't even read the fine print. You're just like, how much? Like, what's my interest on this thing? Oh, okay, 18%. Okay, that's good. That's all you read, right?
Right.
But when it comes to group life insurance, I'd encourage you to just read the fine print. You might think you're covered, but you're not. Because if you die at home, you cannot die at home. You cannot die in the ambulance. You cannot die in the parking lot of your work. You have to die where? On the job.
That means I need to read my terms and conditions.
Hey, if you have one of those policies, The day you feel like, oh man, I think today I'm dying. You know what you need to do? You need to call an Uber and find yourself at work. Right?
Oh wow.
Yeah. And then there's term life insurance. This one is so popular. Most people have term, right? It's really cheap, it's affordable. But traditional term policies, they don't have living benefits. They don't grow money, right? They have so many disadvantages. And then there's whole life. Whole life is good. It covers you for 100 years. You don't have to worry about anything, right? Disadvantage is that it's a lot more expensive. Mm-hmm. And then there's universal life, right? There's index universal life. Now, when I talk about saving money, protecting money, right? When I talk about life insurance, living benefits, heart attack, stroke, cancer, you find that universal life. There's something called index universal life. And that account is very effective. It's all encompassing, and it allows people to do what? To cover all their bases. And that's actually one of our leading accounts that most we help people with. Why? Because it covers all the areas of their life. You're saving money at compound interest. You're not losing because they have a minimum guarantee, right? So people who had money in the 401k are crying, but if you kept your money here, you would make but never lose. You can say the money that sits in there grows tax-free. At some point, maybe I can go into detail about this account because it's very powerful. And then things like life insurance, living benefit, of course, I talked about that. There's death benefits. And you can use the account to save money for your kids now, for your kids' future. You can use it for retirement and so many other things. Okay. But you know what? Our community, we don't have the information. We haven't had this information, right? For hundreds of years now. And by community now, I'm talking about minorities that have not been exposed to this information. And so we've really been at a disadvantage for many years.
For many years. Okay.
Yes. So
I have a couple questions to follow up with what you just said. But the first one is, suppose, you know, like we say, someone is here, they're struggling, they're still trying to get their feet wet. Is it okay to just say, well, maybe for now you can just have like a term policy? Like if you can't afford the whole life and, you know, the one that compounds interest, like just to have something for the family. If you can't afford it, you can't afford to pay more than $20 a month.
Wow, that's a good question. I think I would look to get the one that covers all the bases. Many people think it's expensive. Actually, it's not. Because for your kids, I realize that for the cost of a cheeseburger and fries, you can get them a policy too. Right? For like $30, 30 something, you can get $1 million policy for your child for 30. Or you can get a smaller policy that actually grows cash value for a little bit more. But if you really, really don't have anything and all you have is $15, get the next best thing. It's better to have something than nothing at all.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So like better to have something than nothing. But if you're able, look at all that and see what works best for the family.
Absolutely.
You cover the most ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because things do happen, by the way. And I do encourage people, like, do it early, do it when you're young, do it when you don't have issues. Because I tried to get this after my own, you know, after I had a craniotomy, and then trying to do it on the back end, there's a lot of red tape. Well, you had a craniotomy, it means you're at risk, and then your benefits are fewer.
Mm-hmm.
So
Try
and avoid that. Whenever you're young, just sign up for these policies and protect your family and whoever
you
left behind. Now, the next thing is, I listen to Dave Ramsey. Sometimes I just let Dave Ramsey show play, and it's very interesting. You hear different stories, and you know, he has his own way of what you should do, how you should save, and how should clear debt. And they do not recommend the whole life policy. According to Dave Ramsey, just get the term policy and invest the rest of your money somewhere else. It will grow better than it would in that life insurance policy. What's your take on that?
Well, I've heard that many times, right? Mm-hmm. get a term policy and invest the rest. Now there's many ways to look at it. Number one, what would be the advantage of a term policy? Yeah, it's cheap. You get it now, it's cheap, right? But it's only going to be cheap for so long. It's cheap now because you're 30 years old. After 20 years of you having that policy, it's going to what? It's going to reach its term. It's not going to be the same price again. A friend of mine right now is paying, how much is she paying? 45 for a policy. I can't remember if it's $1 million. But then the insurance company sent her a letter saying, hey, we do realize that in 10 years, when your policy lapses, right, you are not going to be 30 anymore. You're going to be 50 something. They gave her a 30-year term policy, right? She got it when she was young. You're going to be either 50 or 60 something. And they gave her a new price of the new policy. And it was close to I think it was close to $300. From 45 to 300. So it's going to be expensive when? In the future. Why? Because you're older now. Your risk of diabetes, your risk of heart attack, your risk of blood pressure is now higher. And it makes sense. So you can look at that and say, okay, it benefits me right now. And Dave Ramsey also says, oh yeah, your financial situation is going to improve in the future. You might not even need you might not even need life insurance. I mean, let's face the facts. How many people's financial situation improves in the future, right? It's only a handful. It's only a handful of people. Now the question that, you know, that, and then there's a whole aspect of invest the rest. Realistically speaking, who in our community, how many people do you know in our community who have invested very well?
Yeah, because of this lack of knowledge.
There's lack of knowledge. You see, people like myself, if I was still playing around in the stock market, right, I would have lost a lot of money. That's what I knew as where to invest. I didn't know that I could index my money. I didn't know, right? I didn't know that I could make money in certain accounts and not lose that money. Mm-hmm. You see? So that's the problem we have in our community, is that the knowledge is not there. Yeah, he can say invest the rest. He might be thinking about the circle of his friends.
Correct. Right? And I get it too. I get what he's saying. But to your point, it's like, okay, yeah, if I just have this bit of money, I don't even have the rest for that. So, but I get what he's saying. It's a certain type of a person who's making a certain amount. So suppose they can pay $250 towards a, you know, a life policy. I'm just giving an example. And they decide, you know what, let me get a term. I'll pay $50. And this other $200, I'm going to take it to an index, you know, fund or somewhere else. They already have this money set aside for investment. Whereas for us, you're already dividing. I'm eating, paying mortgage.
You see that? And even if...
this be one the other, and the debt that we accrue because of the lifestyle creep that we get ourselves get here. So it's very, very challenging, but everything lies in the knowledge, in knowing what you're doing, what you're supposed to be doing. Because even the trading you're talking about, there are people who are good with it, and like, you have to understand what you're doing. You have to be playing your own game and know what you're doing, and
absolutely,
be ready to have money that you're ready to lose, and all this kind of stuff, you know? Otherwise, we just go there blindly. Oh, Robin Hood, let me sign up Robin Hood. Let me buy Bitcoin.
And that's it. Oh. And that's it.
And then you don't know what to do with the rest. So, I don't know. It's just a lot. It's a lot. It's overwhelming. And what's worse is not even knowing to begin with, you know?
Yes. So, yes. And even if I ask, I can put it this way, right? Mm-hmm. And I want all the listeners to think about this. Mm-hmm. I want you to think about this as a listener. Now, some people might have been in this country, what, 10, 15, 20, 30 years.
Right.
God forbid you fall sick and cannot work again. How long are your savings going to take you before you run into financial problems? And I'll bet you something, Zenith. A lot of the listeners right here, right? Over 85% of your listeners are not going to make it past 2 months. You're not going to make it past 2 months.
If even. Because they said a lot of people are like a paycheck away from, you know,
from disaster. Mm-hmm. But you see, So now, most of those people have term life policies. What happened to investing the rest? If you can only make it for 2 months, what happened to investing the rest?
It's tough.
So some advice works in certain circles. Mm-hmm. If you talk to Bill Gates, if you talk to all these other, yeah, it absolutely makes sense. I'm a multimillionaire. Your average family, right? Something happens to the breadwinner. Oh, disaster.
Yeah.
Right? But accounts, I learned that there are accounts that can do what? Grow your money at compound interest about 8%. Some fixed index annuities, I was actually shocked to see that some fixed index annuities were actually growing at 12% annual interest. They're growing that, and you also what? Are protected. If there's a heart attack, stroke, cancer, all those things, and even death, you are protected.
Right.
It's a more effective solution for our community than doing what? Get a term policy and invest the rest.
I agree. And these things do happen. I was on disability for a year after I had brain surgery, a whole 12 months. So these things can happen. And if you don't have something or a plan, you will know. Because when the disability check, you get something, it's like 60%. It's not enough, like, to cover you from month to month, day to day. You need supplemental income. Your hours will run out maybe after 3 months or so. It will run out, and then for a whole year. So I can imagine a year, 2 years, 3 years, you know, things can carry on like that. You have certain conditions, and maybe it's even permanent. So
I see.
You do need something that can protect you in all bases, just like you're pointing out there.
There so you
very
go
important for our community. You know, educate yourself on life insurance. Figure out where you are, your income. Something is better than nothing.
Nothing at all. Yeah.
And if you can, make sure you get the one that will cover you for almost everything, because things will happen. It's life. Life will life you. So
there you go.
Agitate your life before it agitates you.
There you go. And you know, Zenith, some of the concerns that people have is, well, what if the company goes bankrupt, right? What happens to my policy? I hear those concerns, and I always share with them that, you know, the companies that we work with, right? I don't work for them. I work with them. We're in a partnership.
Right.
You're talking about big corporations like Pacific Life, Prudential, Franklin Investment, right? Company, right? You're talking about companies like AIG. You're talking about Nationwide, it's on your side. All these big corporations, they've been around for over 100 years. What are the chances that they'll be around for the next couple hundred years? I'm not God to tell you whether or not they'll be around, but probability is high that they'll still be around in the future. They've gone through World War I, 9/11, the Great Depression, right? COVID, 2008. What are the chances that they'll face similar things in the future? It's high. They survived. Will they survive? Right?
I'm telling you, No, I'm with you. I agree with you on that. And so we need to pay attention and educate ourselves, educate our children, have these conversations, ask questions, don't be shy about it. It is very important. Yeah, because then it avoids a lot of things, you know, because then there's the kids going to college and, you know, are you prepared for that? It's not just sickness. There's just all these other things, because then you don't want your children to end up with debts that their lives are not at peace because they have these debts in the future, student loans. We already know education is expensive. So everything ties into all that, you know, from the beginning. Okay, so I'll transition a little bit, because we want to know how Mr. Mwaka Chambwa got here. Tell us a little bit about your childhood. You know, one thing I forgot to mention is that you're from Zambia, just like me, and you are Tonga, just like me. Normally, I like to do the greeting in the language of the person at the beginning, but that's okay. We'll say our goodbyes in Tonga. So in general, when people ask you, where is Zambia on the map, what do you say?
You know, I've heard people say Zambia is in Central Africa. And I say, huh? Actually, Zambia is in Central Africa. I say, what? No, Zambia is Southern Africa, right on top of Botswana. So I was born and raised, born in Zambia. I spent about 10, I was born in Mongo, Western Province. So I speak some Lozi. Yeah, some Lozi, I speak some. So I spent about 10 years of my life there, and then my family migrated to Gaborone, Botswana.
Okay.
So I grew up, I spent most of my childhood in Botswana. About maybe 9 years in Botswana until high school, and then I came here to the States, and I've been here since.
So you
Yeah.
came straight from Botswana to America.
Yes.
So you what at what age did you leave Zambia?
I think I was maybe 7.
Oh wow. But
Yeah.
did you guys used to visit Zambia when you were
Oh
living in
yeah.
Botswana?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh
Yeah,
wow.
we visited home quite frequently. Yeah.
Okay. So what was
Yeah.
childhood like in Botswana?
Botswana was fun. It was nice. A little bit hard to assimilate into the culture in the beginning. Well, it wasn't hard speaking the language, Tswana, because it sounds like it's like Lozi.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
They'll say Dumela, but the Lozi say Lumela.
Wow.
They'll say blood is Madi in Tswana. The Lozi say Mali, right? Mali.
So how did you learn Tonga?
Oh, my parents spoke Tonga in the house.
Ah,
Yeah,
okay.
Tonga was in the home. Nyanja was on the streets. A little bit of Bemba here and there, right? So I learned all that before I went to Botswana. I already knew how to speak Tonga and
All
Lozi
those.
and Nyanja. I used to speak some Bemba. I can understand a little bit, some of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And speaking of Nyanja, because on my LinkedIn profile, I have that I'm fluent in three Zambian languages. So I have Tonga, Bemba, Nyanja. So, just like me, I grew up on the Copper Belt. So Bemba, if I don't give you my last name, you just think I'm Bemba. And then Tonga, my parents spoke Tonga. So obviously I learned the language and people are, I can switch and go into either one of them. And then Nyanja, I picked it up when I was a little bit older. So my Nyanja has an accent and I actually had a recruiter reach out to me last week. Like if I can become a Nyanja interpreter, I was like, whoa. I'm like, okay, these things are paying off. This is
There
something.
you
This is something. That's very interesting. Okay, so from Botswana, and how did the idea of coming to America come to you? Like, how did you just come to America?
Oh, it wasn't an option for me.
Okay.
So my parents had this thing where once you're done with high school, they send you here.
Okay.
So
Okay.
yeah, after my older brother finished high school, they brought him to Maine, and then from Maine he went down to St. Louis for school.
Okay.
Yeah, so when he finished, and no, before he finished, once I finished high school, they put me on a flight, a one-way flight to this country with $1,000 in my pocket. And said, go with the grace of God and go and make it.
Wow.
So yeah, that's how I made it here. It was not easy. It was not easy because
Course.
you learn how to hustle, how to make it work, how to make things work. Okay? And that journey, I don't take it for granted. The whole journey of coming here and trying to figure things out, right? It builds certain character traits going forward. It's like what Americans say, hard times make strong men, right?
Right.
And then strong men make good times. And the good times make weak men, right? So those hard times, I can look back now. I thank God the hard times made me to be like always looking for better opportunity. Don't give up, keep pushing, right? If you don't have money now, it'll get better. Just keep at it, right? Keep working, keep working. And I must say that some people are, especially entrepreneurs. I don't know if anybody who listens to your program is an entrepreneur. That they want to see, they set a goal. It's good to set goals. You can say, okay, I want to be a millionaire in 5 years. What if it doesn't happen in 5 years? Some give up and say, you know what, it doesn't work, right? And so one of my mentors says, Mwaka, never fear working indefinitely. Don't be afraid to keep working. Keep going, right? So it doesn't, if you don't reach your target now, keep pushing. You can get it in the next 2 years, in the next 3 years, right? So that's a little bit about that whole aspect about coming here to America, facing difficult situations, but also acquiring character traits that now help today and in the future.
And in the future. Okay, so what advice would you give to a young worker? Suppose somebody or, you know, a young person is telling you, hey, I've decided I am coming to America for school. I have $1,000 in my pockets. So what advice would you give them to prepare them for some of those challenges that you faced?
So I would tell them, choose your career wisely, number one. What are you here in school for? All right? All my friends who did other careers, they ended up going back home because they couldn't find jobs, life was tough. So really choose what you're doing wisely. If I had to go back, I have a bachelor's in science, biology. That's what I did. But if I knew any better, I would have started with nursing. I would have. As a foreign student, international student, F1, I would have done nursing. I gave my brother that advice when he came, and his rise was more, you know, it was more fluid, right? His options, because, you know, going, you know, in the future, if you need like papers and things like that, there's so many companies that can apply for you if you're a nurse. So, and that's a route that my younger brother, when he came, I was just like, listen, you might hate nursing, right? If I could go back, I would have done nursing. Number one, you would get a good job, good paying job. And then number two, somebody will help you get your papers, and then you can live life. Yeah, if you do other things, it becomes difficult. I could have even used nursing as a transition into medicine, but I used a bachelor's of science, and then I had to look for jobs. You could only work in the lab, right? For X amount of dollars. I would have rather I worked as a nurse at a nurse's salary. I can save more money. I can make more money. Even if you don't like it now, in the future, you can always change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is why for season two, I am just focusing on nursing, because I feel like sometimes it gets a bad rap. You know, I hear people say things like, oh, someone asked you to make yourself small. I was future-proofing my American life.
Okay? There you go.
In this country, that's what I was doing. Now, I guess it depends on the context in which somebody shares you that information, and, you know, in which they share with you, or how you receive it. Because it's true, some people want to go back, right, with whatever they studied, and that's perfectly fine. So come here and study whatever it is you want to do, and go back. And, you know, for some people, it's not for you, and I get all that. But it is true for me, because when I came, I was doing business studies. I was doing accounting back home, and I think I picked business administration when I came here. So it was like under finances and everything. But I had to make the switch, because for me, it was, what can I do at a community college that I can graduate and be able to get a job and make decent pay? And for me, the answer was registered nursing.
Yeah,
because with an associate's degree, you can graduate. The hospital can file for you, get OPT, you can get employed, you can get your papers that way, you know. And it's even more so today, post COVID. Today they even recruit in Zambia. You have agencies. Last year we had, is it Interstaff? They went to Zambia. We have a lot of agencies now that actually go to the continent and other continents to recruit registered nurses. There's a pathway for you to get an EB3 visa, and you come here, you get your green card, and you know, it's becoming even more so. Or just on OPT, as long as you have OPT, your hospital is willing to hire you. You're an RN, you have OPT, come on board. So it's interesting that you say that. Okay, but yes, but I mean, obviously, if it's not for you, it's not for you.
It's not for you. No,
it's a very viable pathway
There you go. That's something that I wish I did in the beginning. I think it would have put me in a better place.
Okay.
Going forward in my American journey. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but here you are.
Here we are.
Yours was for you to teach us the lessons in your own way, to share that, very detail for others to hear from. Okay, so tell me, how do you give back to our community, either here or back at home, in the U.S. or back in Zambia?
Right here, really, I'm on a mission, and my mission is one, financial literacy, right? I want to see our community better with finances, what we do. I would love to see less of the GoFundMe, right? If we see less of that, it just means that we're preparing people more. So I'm very intentional. My team and I were very intentional about what we do in our community, helping people qualify for accounts that protect their families, protect their assets, helping them get set, right? Not really looking to charge. I know people say, oh, but some of these things that you have are very expensive. No, we look at what you have, right? We look at what you have and we go from there. So that's what we're doing. And as far as giving back home to Zambia, I've got some ideas, right? I've been wanting to open like an orphanage for the longest, but that hasn't hit ground yet, right? We're still working on different projects back home, like farming, other things. So right now I really can't really say that I'm giving 100% back home, right?
Okay.
I'm just really building here. Right. And empowering our community here with the hope that how we set them here can actually benefit also the people back home. Yes.
Absolutely. I hear that. Okay, so before we wrap up, I have a few fun questions for you. What's your favorite Zambian meal?
My favorite Zambian meal. I want to say everything. So I love kapenta.
Okay.
I used to love shima, but shima started increasing my sugar, so I stopped eating shima. I don't touch it now. I don't even touch shima now because I'm like, the high stress life in medical school increased the cortisol, things like that. And then if you add shima, high carb and sugar content, And I was like, no. So right now, I love kapenta. I love dried fish from home.
Okay.
I love everything, really.
So right now, what have you replaced in shima with? Do you do like oat fufu or like the, what do you call it? Amala? You don't do any of those. So what do you eat the kapenta and the dry fish with?
You just eat it like that. Actually, yesterday, my wife made me a nice salad. It was a kale salad, right? And there was kapenta in the fridge. I took a small plate, almost a platter. I filled it with the kapenta. I had a spoon. I'm eating kapenta here and salad on the side.
Wow! You know, I really applaud you because I wish I could do that. You know, there's diabetes in my family too, both on my mom and my dad's side. And I did have gestational diabetes when I was pregnant. So they check me every 6 months just to see what the numbers are. So I'm very cognizant of that as well. So when I eat in shima, it means it's the only carb I'm going to eat on that day because of, like you said, the very high carb content. But on a day if I'm eating dry fish and kapenta, it must be shima. But I learned how to eat the oat in shima or the emala. It's very dark. It's Western, West African. The ones that are less. They have more fiber. They are not so refined, but they're all the same anyway. But,
If I eat shima, it has to be like one lump. And right after that, I have to go walking for at least 2 miles.
Okay, just to make sure. Yeah, but I do that too. I'll do like 20 minutes. Because that A1C, I'm like, I need to A1C in check.
That A1C. has consequences going forward into the future.
I agree with you. I'm like, man, I don't know what genes my parents gave me, but here we are. So we really have to be careful. Okay. So what restaurant, because you live in Texas, what restaurant in Texas reminds you of home?
Actually, I live in Minnesota.
Oh!
Yeah. I go to Texas for business every so often. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had it all wrong. So, okay. What?
That's okay.
So where in Minnesota? Because that's the state. Where in Minnesota?
So I live in the Maple Grove, Minneapolis area there, Dayton. Yeah, towards the Maple Grove area. Yeah.
All right.
That's where I am.
Okay. I used to fly through Minneapolis to go to Wisconsin. I forget it.
Ah.
The neighboring town.
Okay.
It's cold up there. Woo!
It's freezing. It's very freezing. It's very cold.
I once considered to come to a small university there. It was called Bemidji State because they give.
Oh, Bemidji, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of Zambians went to Bemidji.
Yeah, because they give in-state tuition, you know, for international students, you know, because it's cold.
Yes.
They need the population to go up some sort. Something to note for listeners. If you're trying to come as an international student, the cold places, you can get in-state tuition. All right. So anyway, any restaurants that remind you of home there in Minnesota?
In Minnesota? I haven't been to any, I haven't seen any restaurant here that is like Congolese. I know there's Ethiopian. I haven't seen anything Zambian here. The closest would be the Nigerian restaurant that a friend opened up, but their food is not like ours.
No, it's different.
It's different.
It is very different. It's very
different. I'm yet to find a restaurant that actually I can go to and reminds me of home.
Okay. Because if you find a Kenyan one, it's very close to our food, actually. We have a village here, and it's like very similar. It's kind of like Zambian food.
But
yes, South African is completely different.
But those Kenyans, the Nshima is hard, though.
That is true. The Nshima is hard, and they do cook it hard.
Yeah.
I have to tell my friend, like, no, just
you have to cut it with a knife. That's similar.
But the way they cook veggies, meat, stew,
it's the same.
It's very similar. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's the last movie, show, or book from Zambia that you really enjoyed?
Last movie from Zambia.
A book or show?
A book or show. Okay. I haven't read much of Zambian literature because I was young.
Okay.
Right. Even movies. Sure. Okay. If it's a show, I like these guys. They're very comical. Difficult and Bikilon.
Oh, are they comedians?
Comedians. Yeah, comedians, right? Vicky Ron is difficult. Yeah.
Where can somebody watch them on Facebook?
Just go on YouTube. You'll find these guys, man. They're so hilarious.
Yeah.
They're so hilarious.
Because a lot of comedians now, I've noticed, you know, with people using Facebook as a platform as well. It's like a lot of comedians and people just creating content. And it's good to see, you know, that people can capitalize on these talents.
Absolutely.
Okay. So somebody is going to Zambia for the first time. Where are you telling them to go?
Oh, definitely check out Vic Falls.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely go to Vic Falls, right? It'll be an experience of a lifetime.
Yeah.
If they were going, let's say, this month, I'll tell them to go check out Gwomboka.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
in Mongo. Just,
which one just passed not too long
that's
ago?
That's it. Gombo.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Like if they were going, okay, yes.
If they're going this month, you go check out the excitement that the people have around that celebration. Even HH, the president, went there.
Yeah, no, it looked so nice. I know one of our people in this, Clotilda, you know, she lives here. I saw her there with their outfits and their mississes, you know. With I was like, ah, this is wonderful. And, you know, obviously, like most people, you come here, you suddenly have this appreciation of all the ceremonies that you have in your country. And,
one
of the things I would like to go to. Attend and, you know, anyway, so, but give us some final thoughts, put a lid on this, tie it all together. What should people know? Where can people find you?
All right, awesome. I would like to be available to everybody as much as I can, right? So you can reach me on my phone, 763-334-9578. Shoot me a WhatsApp text message or call me. I'm always open to talking to people. And, you know, we just want to make sure that we're available to every family in our community so we can be better, right? It's high time that I have this vision in my head where all the families here in the diaspora especially, right, are protected. They have the right policy. They have the right coverage. And if 90% of the Zambian community is properly covered, man, then we'll be a formidable economy just by that. What we do here, right, is intensified tenfold through the proper financial literacy and proper structuring of our organizing our respective families, even how we contribute back home, that also becomes better. So that's what I would say. Let's have a conversation. Don't be afraid. I know people fear all kinds of things. Oh, I don't have money right now or this and that. Don't worry about that stuff. Let's just have a conversation, see where your family is and see how we can help everybody respectively. Right. That's what I can say.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes people think that, oh, talking about this means I'm calling my own death.
But no, no.
You're not. No. You're just preparing.
You're being wise. Right. You're building your house on rocks and not on the sand. Right. You're not waiting for the community or the government to take care of your family. You're being proactive.
So other than the phone number, do you have any social media platforms where people can find you?
I'm not big into social media per se. My Facebook is boring. I don't have time. I have a TikTok account where I talk about financial literacy.
Okay.
But I need to talk to the guy who's managing that thing to see if it's up and running. It's just that building business takes a lot of time.
Okay.
And so finding time to make videos has been difficult. But the best way to reach me, shoot me a text on WhatsApp or call me. Yeah, shoot me a text message and we'll just have a conversation just like that.
Maybe hopefully by the time we post this video, we might have the TikTok and we can just add it in the show notes.
There you go.
All right. And before we go, you know, I forgot to ask you one more question. What skill do you wish you had learned in Botswana before you came to America?
Oh, what skill? That's a very good question. Let me see. What do I wish I learned? I wish not so much a skill.
Okay.
Because in when I was in Botswana, I learned so much, including door-to-door sales. So when I came to America, one of the most beautiful things I did was like a scholarship, and it involved door-to-door sales.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I wish somebody sat down with me and painted the true, real expectations of the American life. When you're coming here and you're saying, I'm going to do medicine, what it means. When you're doing engineering, what it really means. And when you come here, are you coming back or are you staying? If you are staying, you need to do A, B, C, D. Organize yourself this way. It doesn't mean that it's the end of your dreams, no. You're just taking a different route to get you to your destination. But this is the the most friendly and safer route as far as actually getting to thrive in the country. Yeah, all the things that we talked about, I wish somebody talked to me about those things just to better prepare me.
Yeah. Which is why we're having this podcast, to share these lived experiences for people who will decide. We know there are many places people can go to in this world, including even staying at home. But for that person who decides, I want to come to America, this is some of the experiences you need to know, other people's experiences. All right, people. So you heard the phone number. I'll put it in the show notes. Be sure to contact him. Educate yourself. Ask the questions. Make the right plans for your family. I know you're not
stressed,
but rather you are just preparing for your future. You're just better off in that place, because let me tell you, the GoFundMes are many, and sometimes people won't come and support you on that GoFundMe. You can't even pay $500 for some people, and it is so sad. You want
the
end of life to be dignified, and part of that is, you know, being prepared financially. So, Mr. Mwaka Chambwa, this was such an honor. This was amazing. And I can't wait to share this to the world. And you can say bye to our listeners.
Hey, bye-bye, listeners. And thank you for tuning in. Share this podcast with your family and friends. It's really important that we are aware of, you know, the different aspects of life in the diaspora. Right, the world is so small, so share this with everybody, and I hope we can all get to connect at some point. God bless, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
I thank you very much, and I'm not going to forget Twalumbaga Party.
Rituminza Hulu.
Okay, that's lazy, huh?
Rituminza Shangwe.
And to my listeners, rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. And until the next episode, it is goodbye.